Ever catch yourself thinking, I could do this on my own? If you're a safety officer with real-world skills, you don't have to wait for permission to build your freedom. On Saturday, January 31st, I'm hosting Safety Consultant 101, a free live workshop. In 2 hours, I'll help you package your expertise into a service clients will pay for and set pricing boundaries so you don't get stuck doing free advice forever. Register now at safetyconsultant101.com. Let's build your freedom.
On today's episode of the Hot Nerd Podcast, we bring you another episode from in the wild, really from a board meeting in Las Vegas. But today we're joined by the amazing, the awesome COO of Kinross Gold, Claude Schiffer. Here we go. Welcome to another episode of the Hot Nerd Podcast. I am your host, Sam Goodman, the Hot Nerd LLC. Make sure you head over to the website, www.thehotnerd.com, for fundamentals, learning teams, support, and so much more. Send us an email, thehotnerd@gmail.com, and be sure to follow along with us on all things social media at thehotnerd or at Sam Goodman. Welcome to today's episode. Hi, everybody. Sam Goodman, the Hot Nerd LLC, the Hot Nerd Podcast. How are things going for you in your neck of the woods? I hope that they are going absolutely wonderful wherever you find yourself in this big, wild, wonky, and pretty stinking awesome world. Things are going great for me. I'm a little here, there, everywhere. You know how it goes. You follow along with all my adventures on social media. And if you're not, you should be. Go follow me on LinkedIn. Just type in Sam Goodman. Look for this ugly mug and you'll find it. You can follow the Hot Nerd LLC. We also created a page for the podcast. So we're trying to just post like episode stuff over there and podcast stuff over there as much as possible, which is pretty new. Just a handful of you have followed that. So if you want just podcast related stuff, you can go check that out. And if you want more of just me posting random memes and mostly just reshares and maybe some of the artwork that we get from the pod and just random, it is completely random. You can go follow me on, LinkedIn. It's not LinkedIn. It's Instagram, right? You can go follow me on Instagram. Just search the Hop Nerd. And again, same thing. You'll see this ugly mug. It's super duper easy. And make sure if you're checking out stuff online, if you're going down the Google rabbit hole, that you cruise over to www.thehopnerd.com. We've got all kinds of new cool things in the shop there if you're looking for a way to support the podcast. And most important of all, we have resources and we have articles and we have all kinds of stuff to help you on your human and organizational performance journey. And if you're looking for an easy way to listen to the podcast, in particular, like while you're at work and maybe you're not supposed to be listening to podcasts, you know, where you put on your headset that you use for Teams, but you actually keep like, you know, YouTube or you keep a podcast up, you know, I see you. Look, I know I've been there. I've done that. I know. I get it. You know, you have to strategically, you know, turn the desk to where you can't see the monitors right from your door. I know. I get it. A great way to listen to it is just thehotnerd.com/podcast. I think you can just click on podcast at the top and just let it play behind that work doc that you're feverishly working on. So with all that out of the way, we have an awesome guest today. We have an amazing guest today. And as I mentioned in the intro to this intro, we are joined today by the amazing, the awesome, the super fun to chat with, Claude Schiffer, COO of Kinross Gold. And we sat down in the wild in Las Vegas at a board meeting, and we had this really neat conversation. And it really is exactly that. It's just a great conversation. And there's just so many powerful little chunks of wisdom, knowledge, know-how that Claude shares through this conversation. So I'm going to shut up. And I'm just going to let you listen to this conversation. And I'm not coming back for any outro or anything like that. We'll close the curtain, roll the music, pull down the lights, however you say that, right, just as soon as the conversation is done and we'll all go home. But I hope that you enjoy it. I know I absolutely just had a blast with this. And I really appreciated Claude taking the time to sit down and have this conversation with all of us. So here we go. Absolutely. happy to get to have this conversation with you, and we'll just jump right into it. I'd like to start right here, and just for anyone out there that's listening, that maybe they don't know who you are, could you let people know who you are, what you do, maybe a little bit of how you ended up doing what you're doing, the story of Claude? How's that okay. sound?
Yeah, that's great. Hi, Sam. It's obviously a great privilege for me to be part of this process and the, you know, doing the different things to support our programs within our organization. I grew up in South Africa, hence the accent. I haven't been able to shake it. I started working on the deepest gold mine in the world. So really tough conditions and working through it and gaining a lot of technical experience. And then in my late 20s, I left with, packed up my wife and three children, went to Canada, and I started working in a couple of different Canadian operations. And got a bit of experience there. And then over time, graduated to work for a contractor for a while, which was a different side of the world. I'd managed contractors for a long time, and then I was suddenly one. And then I went back into the system. And then along with my, most people empty nest their children when they're 18, 20, 25. My two boys left home at 14 to go to boarding schools and things. So my wife and I went to go and work in Europe for a while. And we did that. And then the opportunity came to go to Russia. So I spent 12 years in the Far East of Russia managing the Russian operations for the company. And it was awesome from the point of view that it was really a blank sheet of paper.
Yeah.
We had some real challenges related to the results when it comes to safety. And so the blank sheet then gave us the opportunity to say, look, there's got to be a different way to do this. And, so from an origin, why I do what I do, we'd put up a presentation that said, that had a statement on it that said, better people make safer people. And people challenged that and said, nah, you got to have a safe program and then you end up with better people. We took it to heart and went back and looked and said, no, we were right. If we can get everybody with the right attitude and the right things, the result will be that we will be safe. And, I had, with the great, presence from the organization and the leadership in the organization and the trust from them to allow me to experiment on things. It's kind of like a bad golf swing. It gets worse when you try to fix it, right? And so we had to anticipate that things would get worse as you started to unshackle things. But then we built the Safety Excellence Program and we started to put it together. Then Ian joined us as part of it, and together we put together the vision. And it really became a focal point for us on how we operate and how we do things. So, a long genesis, but an exciting one because it's been an amazing journey. And now as I sit back and watch what's happening on all of our sites and the excitement and what everybody's doing, I think back and say, oh, this is kind of my baby, but it's grown up. And I almost have no control over it anymore, which is which is scary, but awesome. Because you're starting to see it really mature and develop into something that's very exciting.
Well, to your point, you kind of get to that point to where, it's your baby, and you might be losing some control of it, but that's exactly, you want them to mature and maybe flee the nest to go back to some, You want them to take that and run with it on their own and innovate and grow it that much farther,
Yeah, no, absolutely. And it's, like I said, it's been, when we came out of Russia, people sort of thought, should we try this program with the rest of the company or not? And there was some hesitation. And then one or two people had been to see us and they kept pushing us saying, you have to do this. So as we expanded into the rest of the organization, it was exciting to watch.
Well, and I know that's one thing that we notice as we've been just absolutely honored to get to spend time with your folks. We hear that a lot around the Safety Excellence Program. I mean, I would categorize that as something that's wildly successful, within your organization. And to me, I look on that, especially as we've found you in this really great primed up space as we've been having these conversations around HOP and operational learning teams. when we go to have these conversations around HOP, as you can imagine, in many organizations, I would say atypical organizations, as we start to have these conversations, we start talking HOP principles, many of which I'll kind of point to the side here for anyone that obviously can't see this. You have your guiding principles here with many of those principles baked into those. As we've had those conversations elsewhere, there's always this point where people go kind of shock and awe, right? But I really look on back on your journey and it's kind of hearing that this growth of the Safety Excellence Program, your health and safety blueprint, your guiding principles, as we get to the point of teaching these concepts, the response has really been, of course, this makes perfect sense. We're maturing, of course, into this point. And so many of the folks that we spent time with in your organization, they viewed HOP really as just another step in that process. As I think I've heard Ian say many times, in your journey from great to extraordinary, which is just phenomenal to see.
Yeah, and it's always been evolution versus revolution. Because
right, yeah, exactly.
Especially in the mining industry, I've always felt that if you shock the system, then people are resistant. You know, and we say this often. In the early 1900s, people were drilling holes in rock, and that's how we broke. We put explosives in them, and that's how we broke it.
Yeah.
We've had so much technology in our industry in the last 100 years.
Yeah.
But we still drill holes in rock and put explosives in it and blow it up.
Right, right.
So we still, so for us, the resistance to change is big. And so if we can do sort of evolution and get everybody engaged and people say, you know, how we've evolved into something a bit better. Yeah. And you grow and you learn and you're sharper. So
yeah.
That's been the approach.
Yeah, no, I really appreciate that. We chat about that subject kind of throughout this greater community of practice that we're in. And, you know, it's exactly that. It's not a revolution. If anything, maybe it's a bit of a reformation in some areas, but definitely it's just micro improvements and adjustments over time.
Yeah, and the transformational piece is what is always difficult for older folks like myself and Ian, and that is to understand that our workforce is changing too. What excited, you know, people when I was in my 20s and 30s around, you know, I'm going to work hard and try and show my supervisor that I'm tough as nails.
Yeah.
That doesn't compute anymore.
Yeah.
So we've got to adjust and adapt. And sometimes for, like I said, the older folks, it's more difficult to adjust and adapt. But it's part of that evolutionary process. And we all learn and grow.
Yeah, and exactly that, right? I mean, we've gotten good at those things, right? Those that I hate to put labels on things, but just for the sake of conversation, you know, maybe what we would put in the category of our more traditional approaches, which not all good, not all bad, nothing ever is, right? There are many great things there that we carry forward with us in this journey. But we realize that we get to a point to where we've really gotten about as great at those as we can. And we realize that there's that next step to that point on evolution, you know, and then over time, we carry those things forward with us. We tweak, we adjust, we tune, you know, we really micro experiment and improve over time. And that's always the way that I tend to like to think about those things. It's rarely, if ever, within our worlds, at least in our high performing worlds, we usually lack those big, gigantic, massive issues that require big, grand, rapid fixes. We mostly got rid of those, right? Years and years and years ago. Most of where we find our time is spent into that micro improvements and adjustments, because we know that as we micro improve, as we adjust, as we tweak, as we tune, those things tend to accumulate and compound over time. And to me, I think that leads to right exactly where you're at, right? Right exactly where you're at, which I will say that, again, maybe comparing you guys a bit to most atypical organizations on this journey. You guys are, I believe, 12 months into the actual HOP, maybe HOP operational learning teams proper portion of this. If I were just to meet you off the street and spend time in your organization, I would assume you were probably more around the 3 to 5 year mark, just to maybe let you know kind of my thoughts on where you guys are at.
Yeah, and that's great to hear. And you know, from our point of view, I think that there's, for some of the individuals in this group that are working with us, like Ian and myself, there's a lot of personalization as well.
Yeah.
You know, I think about it as, I've never considered myself the model employee.
Yeah.
I've broken rules. I've made mistakes.
Yeah.
I've done things wrong. And sometimes when I've made mistakes, I've been lucky. And other times I've made mistakes, I got caught out, and then I got punished.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I don't know if it's what it is that drives you, but I don't like that. I didn't like it. You know, and I kept thinking, well, I'm an adult. I want to learn from this, but you don't have to hit me. You know, so a lot of the personalization there where we just sort of randomly approach things and said, this is unacceptable. Yeah. We're not going to do that to others because we don't like it. Yeah. Right? And then you go and you look at the literature and you find out, oh, this is something that should be done.
You know?
It's kind of like, you know, I remember many years ago, you know, it was a difficult situation. I arrived at a mine site, and within a couple of days, we had a catastrophic event. Mm-hmm. And while I was busy dealing with this, the warehouse delivered 1,000 wristwatches that had the number of lost time injury-free hours on it. So I'd just taken over. Mm-hmm. And I, to this day, have the one watch that I couldn't give away.
Yeah.
But I also made the commitment at that point, said, I will never, ever give another safety award.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Because the award is for what's happened.
Yeah.
It's not what you're doing.
Yeah.
So what we do now is, in our organization, we reward people for not results. We reward them for what they're doing to get those results. You know, have you put in a 5-year program to clean up your office? Have you put in a 5-year program to pack away the stuff that should be packed away? Or is it garbage? Is it fire hazards? Or reward people for doing those things rather than, oh, the result is you win some award for so many hours.
Yeah.
You know, and the story I often tell is I have a son who's married. He's been married for 2 years. Hmm. I've been married for 40. And so if we come, you know, we're in this setting in Vegas, right? And if we go out this weekend and we don't do the right things, we'll both be in trouble at the same level.
Right.
So it doesn't matter how long we've been married, right? What we do in the next 24 hours ensures that we stay married.
Yeah.
So it's a bit of a, you know, a hard thing, but it's about how you focus and how the number of years don't matter.
Yeah.
It's the number of hours and all of those things. It doesn't matter. What matters is the next 24 and what are we doing to get there?
Yeah, no, I absolutely love that. And the story of the wristwatch is just absolutely powerful. I think that's an excellent piece for people to hear. But you're exactly right. I mean, it's not really about where we've been, what we've done. It's about what we do next, where we're going, right?
Yeah. You know, is there an opportunity for growth?
And, yeah.
You know, when we look at our employees and our people that work with us, you know, nobody wants to get up and say, today I want to be a bad employee. You know, they get up, they go to work and they say, I want to do my best and I want to grow and I want to develop. But if the environment isn't there for them to do that, then it's a challenge.
Yeah.
And so from the leadership perspective in our organization, that is the number one mission, is to create the environment for our people to excel.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, to create the right circumstances for them to learn, to grow, and to go, I'm happy.
Yeah.
You know, if it's not fun, don't do it.
Yep, I love it.
Right.
That's one of my general rules of life. I mean, I'm just going to completely level with you here. And I share these with some folks, but it's exactly that. There's a few things that I put in kind of my general categories of especially work, right? Because work's work. It might as well be fun if you're going to work, right? So I always kind of tie it into good work, doing it for the right reasons, and then I always tag in exactly that. Yeah. I got to have fun while doing it. Fun doesn't mean that it's not challenging. That doesn't mean that it's always perfect. That doesn't mean that sometimes it might even suck, but it's fun.
Absolutely right. I mean, and so sometimes people challenge me on that one and say, well, when you have a catastrophe, that's not fun. So yeah, but the part that's fun is that I'm the one who has the leadership capabilities and the ability to deal with that.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, none of those events are nice things, but we deal with it. And that's why, you know, it's incumbent upon us to say, well, I don't want to be in that spot ever again.
Yeah.
It's kind of like I think it's John Wooden, right, who says, and after a loss, sit here, think about it for a few minutes, and decide that you never want to feel this way again.
Right.
And then you move forward, right?
Yeah.
And then when you do start to see the successes that we're having on the sites and the emotional attachment and how people are excited about it, how it's transformational to some people. You know, when they recognize the examples that we give in these programs and they see themselves in the bad example,
mm-hmm.
like, oh, I'm the bad guy, yeah. And they start to change their behavior.
Yeah.
We're having an impact on a larger group of society and people. And, you know, hopefully, like I said, better people. And if a guy goes home or an individual goes home and they're having a less stressful, you know, piece,
yeah,
then it makes a difference.
No, it absolutely does. I mean, we it's really, to me, at the core of so much of what we're talking about here. I think in some of the things we get maybe too mired down in the details, and I really like to always back up and remember that so much of what we're talking about is we're talking about humanizing our approaches. It's really that. We're talking about humanizing our approaches, really breaking down maybe some of that bit more traditional parent-child relationships that maybe have existed within our work worlds. And as you've so eloquently said several times throughout our conversation, approaching our people like adults because they are. And yep. Those adult-adult relationships and understanding that we're all imperfect people operating in an imperfect world, doing the best we can, almost always doing it for the right reasons with the best of intentions, but also recognizing that we all have the opportunity to continue to grow and get better and innovate and improve together. That's pretty cool. That's pretty powerful.
Yeah, and you know, like I said, it's amazing for me to watch in our organization now that we have different levels at different sites, but yeah. how the maturity is evolving, how leadership is evolving, because suddenly, you know, they have to adapt to people who are going to say, no, this is not acceptable for you to ask me to do this job in this way.
Yeah.
Or, you know, you have to change your behavior. And so it's that challenging piece.
Yeah.
All right. It's not just about management having expectations of more and more and more for less from the employees, but the other way around.
Yeah.
Having, you know, the journeymen and the people on the ground expecting more from management.
Yeah.
You know, and we coined the term a couple of years ago after watching I'm going to use the term football. I'm both an NFL fan and a English football fan. And watching that and recognizing that the coach is standing on the side of the field. He's not in our office somewhere doing a spreadsheet.
Yeah.
Trying to figure out who's the players. He's standing on the side of the field with his, you know, specialists looking at every player's behavior. Is this guy running enough? Is this guy doing this fast enough? And it's, you know, the NFL's even more complicated with all these position coaches and things like that. They're watching every move.
Yeah.
And yet, in our industry and many construction type and manufacturing type industries, supervisors sitting in an office with a glass window. Looking down to see when the guy stops working.
Yeah.
Not is he doing work as what he imagines it versus what it actually is?
Yeah.
Or is he engaged? Can he see the problems? Can he anticipate where there's a challenge?
Yeah.
So, you know, we coined the term watching the game, and it's a critical part of our approach is to get everybody to watch the game.
Yeah.
And be focused on what we're doing.
No, I love it, you know, because exactly that, right? We see that so often. We look for those magical answers, either through that glass window, and more so in our modern work worlds, usually in the computer screen, right? On some data set of some point, looking for that answer, looking for that next, where's it at? When really it's exactly where you said it's at.
Yeah, the other one that we always challenge is supervisors go to the work face, or even other leaders, they go to the work face. The first thing they do is, because it's noisy, they can't talk to the guy.
Yeah.
So they shut everything down.
Yeah.
They say, hey, how was the hockey game last night? Yeah, we liked it. Okay. Hey, did you fill in your 5-point safety card? Yes. Okay. Give it. Yeah, let me sign it. And then they leave. And they don't observe for 1 second how the individual actually works.
Yeah.
And then when the challenges come, people say, well, we should have seen this. So it's a critical part of changing that and adapting that culture to get people to watch what's going on so that we understand what's the right way to do things.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and exactly that, right? I mean, we all recognize that, you know, of course, we can never see everything. We can never predict everything. We all recognize that, back to imperfect people, imperfect world, all the things that the complex and chaotic world that we live in, right? But I think you're exactly right. To stand the best chance at that, if you're out there spending time being genuinely curious, not in the, hey, why are you doing that mode, but more in the teach me, show me. I'm just here to support. Let me know what you need.
Yeah.
I think that's about the best way that you can tap into that stuff.
Yeah. And, you know, you often find situations where, you know, somebody's been doing a job for 10 years And then somebody who's just arrived on the environment comes and says, well, this is how I think you should do it. You know, and we're all prideful and to some extent. If somebody walks into a room and says, you know what I think you should do?
Lead balloon, yeah. Right?
Let me take some notes here because I really am keen to hear what I should do.
Please, yeah. By all means. Yeah. Right? Well, yeah, that's right in that bucket of things that we genuinely hate as people, right? Yeah. That just doesn't work. Right, but to that point, exactly. I mean, when we're in that, can you teach me, can you show me, most of us, I think most people generally speaking, we like what we do for a living. We're usually pretty stinking good at it. And if somebody comes along and is genuinely curious, and we can tell the difference. We can tell the difference between BS curiosity and the real deal stuff. I get excited to teach people about my job. Of course I do. I like what I do for a living, and I'm excited to share that with people. You know, that's a pretty powerful interaction that we can have. And when that opportunity presents itself, that set of cold eyes maybe that comes in, I don't do this for a living. But when I do see that thing where I'm like, that doesn't make a lot of sense to me. How do you end up doing it that way? And we walk through that. And then I don't know. I mean, I'm a human. Right. And I've uncovered many situations of things that I've done one way for many years to find out that I've done that thing the wrong way for many years.
Yeah. I have a great little anecdote related to that. We were developing a team that was going to attempt to break a world record in high speed tunneling.
Yeah.
And we needed to bring more labor in. And there was a guy who'd worked at a fast food joint. And he was a really tiny guy, and he was on the team, and we put the team in a room and said, we want to know what you can do better. How can you do your job faster? Because when you're high speed tunneling, it's all about speed. And he raised the question. He said, why do we hang the pipes 6 meters in the air? We should just put them on the side of the wall. And the rest of the team, everybody just yelled at him and said, are you crazy? You know nothing about mining. The drivers of the loading vehicles will drive into these pipes and damage them. And he said, why don't you tell them not to? So what we ended up doing was setting up on surface almost like cones and barrels and things with pipes on.
Yeah.
And we trained drivers for 3 months prior to our attempt to drive down those tunnels without hitting the pipes.
Yeah.
Which then made, fast food worker who is now working underground, made his job so much easier.
And the hero.
Yeah.
Being a hero is not half bad either, too, right?
So it is always good to get a fresh set of eyes and somebody to ask the why. Why do you do that? And if you can't really explain it, then there may be some challenges with what you're doing.
Yeah, I love that. And especially with that particular example, it's the challenge. It's the breakaway from, well, we've always done it this way because, but it also ties in that bit of tri-storming, of micro-experimenting, and more safe to fail setting on the surface, barrels, cones. We get to test it out without any real negative outcome or opportunity for negative outcome. And I'm sure that's some of what you guys were looking at. Let's see how many times we actually hit this in practice. Maybe before we stick it on the wall.
Exactly. Let's try. And that relates to the other part, right? It's the training.
Yeah.
And giving people, like I said earlier on, the opportunity to grow, learn, and develop.
Yeah.
And you don't only sit and learn in a classroom.
No.
Yeah. It's about, the scope, getting some academia, but at the same time going out there and in practice and learning how to do things and how to be better. So
yeah, and
it's exciting stuff.
It truly is. And especially with your all's approach to things, and I'm going to tie this back into the training piece because you were in some of my sessions before. I tend to pick on the retraining piece in particular, right? Which is a whole nother conversation. But I'm going to tie this back into and pick on Ian a little bit since he's not in here. I'm going to talk about him for a second, right? So as he goes back and listens to this later, he'll get to hear that I'm talking about it. But he mentioned something in our podcast that really stood out to me, and it's I've bragged it up since he's talked about it because it was just powerful. I'd asked him this question about what's next. Right, what's next? And his response was instantly, I don't know, we'll go ask the sites, right? Which is, talk about the answer, right? That is the answer. But to tie that back into training a bit, it's exactly that. So often, around that training, we've kind of guessed, I guess back to sharpening skill sets, growing competency as professionals in any skill set or trade. That's something that we desire. We want that as people. But so often we've really gone down the path of going, I think they need, right? Instead of going, hey, what do you need? And that's such a powerful shift, right? When we ask that question as adults, because we're adult learners, I might be pretty great at all the stuff you think I need. But when you ask me, I'm going to tell you that piece of equipment, I don't really run it very much, and I would like to learn more about it. We've got the best opportunity to grow competence and skill set, and they're going to want to be there, which is pretty neat as well.
No, you're absolutely correct. And it's also part of, we have these cookie cutter recipes for what people need to be trained in.
Right.
You know, and then we say, well, in order to get your license to do this, you have to be able to do A, B, C, D. And guy says, well, I'll never do B in my life.
Yeah.
And it's part of, you know, getting the right skill sets around people. And we've seen a big shift in our organization from an operational excellence point of view, where we used to blindly focus on availability and utilization in our organization. And then suddenly you realize that, you know, extreme availabilities cost a lot of money.
Mm.
We can't afford it.
Yeah.
And then even if you get, you know, I'm a huge Formula One fan, and you know, you can see your car go 99.7% availability, and then it dies on two laps from the end,
yeah,
and you get 0 points.
Zero, yeah.
So it's not chasing that; it's the appropriate amount.
Yeah.
What's the appropriate amount of availability?
Yeah.
It needs to be available for the race. It doesn't have to be available before the race.
Yeah.
So fix it. You know, do whatever it is. You know, it's those kinds of things. So it's a great, you know, sort of, like I said, it's great to watch the evolution.
Yeah, absolutely love it. Absolutely love it. And as you mentioned, Formula One, it was not something that I'd ever really been into. And we were kind of chatting about travel at the beginning of this. You spend enough time in transit, right, kind of stuck in between different places, and you tend to go down the Netflix rabbit hole in particular, right? So I ended up in the Formula One show, and now I'm starting to nerd out. I can't unsee, right, now that I've seen, right? Here I am in the States thinking NASCAR's cool, it's not uncool. I'm not saying it's uncool, but Formula One, holy cow.
But it's relative to what we're doing, right? And we want to be the pinnacle of our of our game. We want to be at the top end of what it is we're doing. And so as we're doing these transformational things and health and safety and that, we don't want to be a follower.
No.
And that's, you know, sometimes people give motor racing a hard time in general because, oh, you go around in a circle. And that's not the case. You know, we think about ABS brakes and traction control and power steering, all those things we invented in Formula One. Right?
Yeah.
So there is a reason for it. It's to take us as a society to the next level of excellence.
Yeah.
When you see people changing four tires on a car in 2 seconds.
2 seconds.
Then you say, well, okay, this is a different game.
Yeah.
And it's the same for us in our organization, what we want to do with health and safety. We don't want to be known as, oh, we won this award because we were slightly better.
Mm.
We would say, well, these guys are in a different category.
Yeah.
They're you know, the way they're doing this is completely...
It's a different scale.
It's, yeah. You know. And, you know, there's a little bit of arrogance to it. You know, when you say, look, I'm not playing the same game as you, so I'm not competing against you.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't matter. And we often talk about how people are so focused on winning, but it doesn't matter if we win. We want to play the game tomorrow.
Yeah.
And that's the important part. If I lose today, okay, I'll learn from that, but I'm playing tomorrow.
Exactly, yeah.
Now, you can't keep losing because some people say, you don't know how to play this game.
Wrong game.
Right? wrong game. Right? Yeah. But yeah, it's a developmental process, and using these other analogies, pinnacle sport, two different things, you know, excellence in the way people do their work and the development of people, it's an awesome piece.
Yeah. Well, I'm here to tell you, at least from my humble opinion, I feel that from our experience, from the time that we've got to spend with your organization, and I'm going to tell you something here that you already know, but with your amazing and awesome people throughout your locations, that's exactly what we've seen. We've seen an organization that is leading the pack. It's out there innovating, improving, making things better, and it's been really cool.
Yeah, no, so we certainly appreciate that. And that's part of the whole process was to benchmark and go and say, well, okay, are we really, you know, where we want to be?
Yeah.
And then when you slowly start to see how the excitement develops in people on the sites and what they see they're achieving. That's what it's about. It's not, you know, whether we have a trophy that we've nailed to the wall with a 6-inch nail. It doesn't matter. So
exactly. Right. Those trophies as awards, they're okay. They feel pretty stinking good sometimes. I mean, there's nothing wrong with that. Mm-hmm. But to hear the story from your locations, to hear folks share that story of things getting better, innovation, improvement, that's where it's at. So last but not least, I don't want to keep you too long. I hope between our little bit of time together, you realize that I can probably sit here for about the next 6 hours.
Yeah, I'm the same. I'm passionate about this, you know.
But the last question that I tend to ask just about everybody, and I don't know how I got to asking this question this way, but I always ask any final words. And that sounds a whole lot darker than what it should, but I've just kind of stuck with it. And what I mean by that, any pro tips, any things that you would like to share with folks out there that might be listening, maybe anything that you might view as a bit of the magic sauce for what you guys has developed here, especially as kind of the architect of this safety excellence and hop in this journey so far. What would you share with folks out there if you have anything?
Yeah, you know, I think it's anecdotal, and I may butcher the story, but I had read once that Henry Ford had gotten some people in to come and, you know, review his organization, you know, some consultants. And they came back to him and said, you know, we can't really find much. And he said, well, go again.
Yeah.
And then they said, well, we're not sure why. Why do you want to do this? And he said, well, we're a business. We want to make money.
Yeah.
Response was, again, Mr. Ford, you know, with all due respect, you have billions of dollars in the bank. How much money do you need? And he said, a little more. And so when it comes to all these pieces around health and safety and how we treat our people and how we do these things, when people question me and they say, gee, you know, Claude, you put so much into this and we're always doing these different things, when is it enough? Mm-hmm. I go, oh, I need more. And how much? Just a little more, right? and that's what it's about. It's like we have to be relentless.
Yeah.
And we can't, you know, take our finger off the dial. We just have to keep going. And we watch the game and we make sure that everybody's safe.
Yeah.
Because we're going to come back to work tomorrow. And we want to be in the right space when we come back.
Yeah.
Which is great.
Yeah. So I love it. Thank you for that.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you for coming on. I greatly appreciate it.
Like I said, you know, you've said it as well. We could do this for hours.
Yeah.
Because it certainly is an exciting thing.
So. Yeah. Appreciate you coming on.
Great. Thanks.
Thanks for listening, everybody. We greatly appreciate all of your support of the Hot Nerd Podcast, the Hot Nerd LLC. If you need a little bit of help bringing human and organizational performance to life, if you would like to take your efforts around learning and improving to the next level, yep, I can help with that. Head over to www.thehotnerd.com or send me an email, thehotnerd@gmail.com. Until next time, bye, everybody. Bye.
Ever catch yourself thinking, I could do this on my own? If you're a safety officer with real-world skills, you don't have to wait for permission to build your freedom. On Saturday, January 31st, I'm hosting Safety Consultant 101, a free live workshop. In 2 hours, I'll help you package your expertise into a service clients will pay for and set pricing boundaries so you don't get stuck doing free advice forever. Register now at safetyconsultant101.com. Let's build your freedom.